morning to honorable members and our esteemed guests, Professor Daniel De Vera and Professor Mr. Mark Buxte. Yes. We are proud to have you here. And it is for the first time that this meeting is not starting on time. And I don't know why, but we are very, very sorry for that. Distinguished guests. And the intention of this meeting really is just to together with the experts in the industry to look at what exactly the implication of the speech of the president, that is the state of the nation, that sets the tone for the whole year. What are the implications and what is the likely impact? But without much ado, I've been requested by the deputy speaker with a special request for 5% to meet. I don't know what exigency is there, but I would like to request the honorable Kwai to preside to the meeting. But on my way, they told me it's 30 minutes. But even the 30 minutes now, I don't know how long I'll be part of the meeting. I'll ask the different members who accept to accede to that. If they have problems, then we'll see what they do. Mamdome, it's just a request. Okay. No, let me go on. Okay, over to you, Mr. Kwai. And indeed, very sorry for this. Then I shall come and meet you after the meeting with the speaker. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair President. Today is not here. I'm sure someone is preparing somebody here. I don't know why they decided me to chair the meeting. But Richard Master, without me giving hand to the presenter from the University of Western Cape, I want to talk to that with Professor Dennis. Can I give you a...
We have been one presentation.
Okay. Can Professor Dennis start? Or anybody?
Morning, Mr. Chairperson and honorable parliamentarian. I've been in academia all my life, so when it comes to issues of protocol, I'm still learning. So I think I should just say all protocol is observed. We are very honored to be here this morning. We've got an opportunity for us to participate in this discussion. Just before I give the presentation, I want to say we have removed all references, all sources. We wanted our presentation to flow, but if there is going to be an official version, another version, it will have full references. You know, for us, it's very important to get sources. The title of our paper, or maybe just before I go to the title, Mark and I teach in the Department of Geography and Environmental Studies at the University of the Western Cape. The department has got two degree programs. One in tourism and another one now in geography. Both of us are involved in these programs. The title of our paper is The the 2018 State of the Nation address, a thematic analysis focusing on tourism. Our presentation is structured as follows. We do have a brief introduction, which is followed by a brief section that highlights the tourism plans, just to provide context. Then we focus on the what we call the explicit and implicit references to tourism in the State of the Nation address. We then address the strategic policy directions on which we speculate what the zona could imply to the sector. And we conclude by giving a few recommendations. In his sector for the Nation address, President Zuma emphasized that unemployment, poverty, and inequality were the major national challenges. The President focused on the need to promote economic growth based on infrastructural development and accelerated job creation. The President made several references to the National Development Plan, which, is probably the vehicle, the institutional vehicle, through some of these challenges can be addressed. The discussion this morning will engage in a thematic focus of the state of the Nation address, and of course we are focusing on tourism. One might ask a few questions, or one major question. What insights can the tourism sector derive from the President's set of the Nation address? Just to highlight some of the tourism trends, the Minister has said that tourism is a vital component of the economy and it is a key part of the national growth plan. The contribution of tourism to growth, domestic product, it's quite huge, 190 billion, and this includes both the direct and indirect flows. This contribution is also 8% of the gross domestic product. In terms of its direct contribution, it's 70 billion rand. So clearly, it shows that we are looking at a huge sector. It outperforms all the other sectors in terms of its economic importance. However, it has been underperforming if one compares this sector to other tourism sectors in other countries, particularly countries those that we compete with. For example, for every 16 arrivals in this country, there is one job created. In Brazil, those 16 arrivals generate 2.3 jobs. In Thailand, it's 7.5. Australia, it's much higher. It's 11.2. So, I mean, this just shows something about the possible potential of the sector and what could be done. The average length of stay is 7.5 days. For land, for those who come in via our land borders, average is 5 days. For the air travelers, it tends to be 16 days. The most common length of stay is 2 days, and we also have those variations. 14.6 million adults visited different places as domestic tourists in 2010, and they spent 22 billion rand. So coming to the State of the Nation address, as I said, watching the President deliver the State of the Nation address, I was hoping that there would be direct references to tourism. And of course, when those direct references came, you can imagine there was a smile on my face. And I'm sure all the members here must have welcomed that. I just want to refer to those two specific references. When the president said, and I quote, "We identify tourism as one of our job drivers." In the next reference, he stated that tourist arrivals grew at an impressive 10.7% between January and September 2012. This is much higher than the global average of 4% for last year. Apart from these two direct references, unfortunately, there was nothing directly on tourism in the State of the Nation address. So many tourism stakeholders probably expected more focus on tourism, especially whether tourism would be mobilized for poverty reduction and job creation. There are also questions such as which instrument would be used to achieve this. We had just a snap unscientific survey based on the State of the Nation address. It was unscientific. We just wanted to find out from colleagues and students what they felt about the State of the Nation address with respect to tourism. A good number of our colleagues knew that we were going to come here to talk about that. And some of the responses we got were, well, we expected more focus on tourism. Would have liked to hear how government plans to promote tourism growth. But then with some who expressed the notion that, well, tourism, in a sense, was mentioned directly. Mention of cultural heritage indirectly addressed tourism issues. So really what it means is that within this State of the Nation address, perhaps they could have been more discussion on tourism issues. So the remaining part of our presentation, which is the main part of the presentation, we talk about some of the indirect references in the presentation. We focus on now the various strategic policy directions, some of the policy documents, and some of the language used in the State of the Nation address, which might help to inform us about the direction the government is possibly charting with respect to tourism issues. First, we'll focus on some of the documents, very briefly. The National Document Development of Tourism Strategic Plan for the period 2011-12 to 2016-16 is quite explicit about how the direction tourism development should take. But we have selected just two strategic objectives which we think are quite illustrative. So two of the department's programs focus on tourism development and tourism growth and have the following strategic objectives. Tourism projects are being targeted at the unemployed. So in other words, one of the goals is to see how jobs can be created. And we hope this is another direction which is going to be pursued vigorously. There's also the other strategic objective related to improvement of service levels in the tourism industry. Okay? Improve service levels. This will make us more competitive. But in the process of improving service levels, hopefully there will be more jobs created. So essentially what we are getting from this is that, okay, the sector, tourism is being, geared for job creation. The strategic plan highlights a multi-pronged focus on several markets. This is in terms of addressing where the tourists are coming from. It does talk about the core markets, the tactical markets, the investment market, and the watch list market. This is very useful. It shows that there is an attempt to diversify the best the source of the tourists. But in our analysis of this section of the document, we thought that in line with some of these strategic objectives, it would have been illustrative perhaps to highlight where some of these additional tourists could go. Because the issue of, benefits generated by tourism is a very important one. We need to address the source, but I think we also need to focus more on the destination areas. For example, are we going to have some of these additional tourists visiting provinces or those areas which in the past have not been attracting tourists? Given this expanded focus, what's going to be the focus on, pro-poor tourism? We've been thinking about some of those issues. It's good to broaden the focus, but I think it's also important to focus on the destination. Some very key questions one might want to ask. What should the government do to develop tourism in order to increase the share of tourism income to local communities and low-income groups? This is a pertinent question, especially when one considers that in the State of the Nation address, there is this main focus on unemployment and the poor. The other question is, in order to promote direct economic participation by the poor in the tourism sector, and also to promote economic participation of the poor in downstream sectors that supply tourism. So we are thinking about, tourism specifically as a sector, but what about those people who are not directly involved in tourism? For example, some are in agriculture, producing various things which are consumed by the tourists, which go to the hotels and so on. So I think it's also important to focus on what is being done to promote the participation of such groups. Now, we want to highlight two types of tourism which in a direct way were referred in the State of the Nation address. In the address, the President did talk about cultural heritage, talked about the poor, as we say. So there are two types of tourism in this country which could take advantage of initiatives to address cultural heritage issues and the poor. The best one, let's just talk a bit about cultural tourism, where we are at the moment and what's the potential. Cultural tourism in the State of the Nation address, or that reference to that, is indicative of government's intention to promote this type of tourism. I think this is a reasonable assumption. Cultural tourism attracts tourists who want to experience the culture, the history, and the arts of receiving communities. So it does get close to different communities. So that's one of its advantages. It is a positive economic and social impact. It has positive economic and social impact. However, if it is well managed, it does create jobs, provide new business opportunities, strengthen local economies, and help to diversify local communities. The white paper on the development and promotion of tourism in South Africa, it's a bit later, 1996, comprehensively addresses heritage tourism issues. And I think this white paper in discussions of tourism needs to be referred to. There's a much more recent document, the National Tourism Sector Strategy. That strategy is explicit about the links between culture and heritage on one hand and tourism development on the other. So when one looks at that strategy, when one looks at the white paper and refers to that state of the nation address, one says by focusing on cultural heritage, by focusing on the poor, there is scope for certain types of tourism to be used as instruments of economic development. However, if cultural tourism is not properly managed, it could have devastating diverse impacts, and these really do affect sort of the intended beneficiaries, the poor and local communities. And some of these adverse impacts include possible commodification and devaluation of culture and tradition. So the effect of this would be to undermine the goal of protecting culture and tradition. It could also result in the displacement of local communities. And this could be done in order to promote market-related, say, cultural villages that are physically accessible to international tourists. So that is just a possible conflict, and this is what has happened in some countries. And also, there is the likelihood of resource use conflict. In some countries, local communities have been denied access to natural and cultural resources that were previously accessible for them in order to preserve these for the consumption of tourists. So that could be a challenge. So we also want to focus on pro-poor tourism, for obvious reasons. This type of tourism has enormous potential for the creation of jobs and income for the poor. And it should be an important instrument in poverty reduction strategies. This is something hopefully which is going to be promoted. Pro-poor tourism unlocks opportunities for economic gain and other livelihood benefits for the poor. It does focus on projects that spread benefits and income to communities across the country. As we know, at times tourism tends to be quite selective. Most of the tourists ending up in those enclave sectors of the country, which are already doing well. So with proper tourism, there is room, there is potential for tourists to end up visiting those communities which are not necessarily in high-performing areas. And it does provide an opportunity for a real economic engagement of the poor by, of course, promoting employment opportunities and hospitality skills of the poor. Because the moment tourists start visiting these localities, hopefully you find that some of the service providers, some of the local providers will be the people from these communities, and there will be need for them to acquire certain hospitality skills. It does promote, help local communities, particularly small-scale farmers and vendors, to become part of the supply chain. This is something positive about tourism as a sector. The way it is linked to other sectors of the economy, the way it is linked to, say, infrastructural development, the way it is linked to agriculture, small-scale industries, and so on. So there is an opportunity to include a number of groups, including the poor, in the supply chain, all these groups supplying tourists. It also enables poor entrepreneurs to operate tourism businesses. Okay, what the presentation does so far is really to show the potential, to show that, really with tourism, there could be a solution to some of the challenges. But we also need to focus on some of the challenges associated with tourism. One is to sound a cautionary note regarding sort of the possible role of tourism. What do we expect from tourism? For example, in this country, regarding transformation, tourism could be an effective vehicle to promote, cultural interaction and so on. So that's one aspect. But we also need to address issues of its distribution. Tourism, to what extent does it cover all the provinces? Of course, we know that there is a tendency for few of the provinces to attract most of the tourists and also to benefit from the expenditure of the tourists. And this is something which needs to be addressed if some of the goals I've been talking about are achieved. But, tourism is seasonal. So if we are to focus on tourism as the economic development strategy, one is to, consider all these issues. So what happens during the off-season? What happens to jobs and so on? The other is involved. Because the market, the tourists come from different countries. So like what is happening at the moment with the global recession, we find that some of our main suppliers in Europe and so on, they've been going through a difficult time. So, these are some of the risks involved with using tourism as a development strategy. And other issues of its sustainability, especially regarding how we can position and reposition this brand. And of course, there is the issue of competitiveness, how to achieve differentiation, especially when we consider our cultural access. Just to conclude, would like to note the following points, and also just try to see how this could relate to the state of the nation address. We feel that emphasis could have been placed on the intersectoral linkages between tourism and national development strategies in the State of the Nation address. Maybe just a way of highlighting that tourism could be a viable vehicle for economic growth and could be used to challenge, to address those three challenges of unemployment, poverty, and inequity. Heritage tourism needs to be intricately linked with cultural preservation and poverty reduction. Okay? So it's important to focus on heritage tourism. But if we are to achieve national development goals, it has to be properly contextualized. The third point there is need for a specific and coherent set of planned intervention for mainstreaming a pro-poor approach across the tourism sector. This is a huge challenge. The literature shows that in now countries that have invested extensively in the tourism sector, but have not addressed perhaps the issues of inequity, whether it's social or social in those senses, but that problem. Some of the countries in the Caribbean region are a case in point. So you find that they really need to focus on a coherent set of planned intervention. The other point focuses on a great need for quantitative information on the link between tourism and infrastructure, tourism and agriculture, tourism and natural resources. And finally, this is just to reinforce the argument, tourism is not necessarily the panacea that has the potential to contribute to national development and poverty reduction in South Africa. Well, what does this mean? In the presentation, we have argued that, yes, we can address some of those challenges through tourism, but it's also important to sound that cautionary note to say it's not necessarily a cure for all those challenges. So this takes us again to the issue of implementation strategies and so on. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Professor. Mr. Magwada, to add, you still have 10 minutes. Can I give Mr. Sibusi Sokubayo for a second presentation? We usually do that after that you start with the questions and clarification.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. We requested Prof to make the first presentation so that we can get that overarching theoretical framework for tourism. And my presentation will zoom into two specifics in terms of the references and implied references to tourism that were mooted by the President. So we will then have the two presentations for further processing by committee to say these are the theoretical frameworks in terms of what Prof have alluded to in terms of the macro level. At a micro level, then we'll zoom into these issues. The State of the Nation address had direct and indirect connotations for tourism. We have to understand tourism as a system. So if you look at the entire speech, maybe there is only those few lines where tourism was mentioned. So then do we then dismay and say the President is not talk about tourism, or do we say this is what the President said, and then we try and find our niche in terms of everything that it was, because tourism is a system. So if we say we'll only look at what, because it was just the issue of jobs, creation and the issue of percentage that was mentioned. So if we were to leave it at that, that would miss a lot of things. So we have to look at what other indirect references that we need to work on as a committee. Now, the president referred to the National Development Plan, which is a plan that looks at 2030 in terms of where we want to be as a country, and also in terms of that plan, where we want to create about 11 million jobs in all the economic sectors. Now, if you look at the tourism industry, we have already developed the National Tourism Sector Strategy. Now, we have these two strategies that talk to tourism. If you look at the National Tourism Sector Strategy, it has targets up to 2020. You have targets for 2015, and you have targets for 2020. So, well, what are the implications now of the National Development Plan? So, this means that the NTSS has then to extend projections to 2030, so that we speak on the same script in terms of the National Development Plan and the National Tourism Sector Strategy. But we have to acknowledge that some of the indicators in the NTSS are very difficult to project for such a long period. If we were to look at GDP, for example, there are many economic drivers and situations that can take place in that long period, then you might end up maybe having wrong projections. But there are projections where you can crunch numbers up to 2030. And another important aspect in terms of the national development is each of the bill that is in front of the committee as we speak. If you look at that bill, the bill talks to the very national tourism sector strategy to say this strategy must come up with indicators, targets, plan, guidelines, procedures, and so on to ensure that there is development and transformation of tourism in the country. Now, if we do not revise the targets in the national tourism sector strategy, you're going to have these targets because they are already there. The bill just formalizing NTSS. We have already adopted NTSS. But NTSS is a strategy, so the strategy is a living document that you can always revise. So, therefore, we need to ensure that when we adopt this as an act in the bill, it also has some attachments and amendments in terms of amending some of the aspects of the NTSS, because if you will adopt it as it is, it means you will have 2030 targets in the NDP and 20. So our projections therefore won't be talking to each other. That's why I was saying therefore there is a compelling need to make sure that we synergize the two. Another issue that we picked up from the thought is the issue of infrastructure projects. So the president mentioned that you have a number of projects that was mentioned before. I won't go into details, but there was no mention of a specific tourism project. So our understanding is that you have this national infrastructure plan that has those projects there. So that is what the presidential infrastructure coordinating committee is concentrating on. But tourism has been declared as one of the six economic drivers. So as a committee, we need to start engaging with the PIC to ensure that there are tourism projects that are implemented to ensure that you unlock tourism. If we can make an example, if you look at infrastructure projects, we are not talking about building hotels, but we are talking about an aviation infrastructure. If you look at the coastal provinces, for example, from here in Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and KZN, they have a huge potential for beach resorts. We don't have those in South Africa. But you have places in terms of marketing that people will send a beach resort. But if you go elsewhere in the world, you will see that a concept of a beach resort, really, we haven't gone to that point in South Africa. Why? Because those take a huge infrastructure in terms of your bulk water supply, your bulk electricity supply, and mainly these are remote coastal areas. And the investors don't want to put their money on the ground, so they want to build hotels where, in the areas where infrastructure is already provided. So the engagement, therefore, with the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinator Committee is to say, these are the infrastructure needs for tourism that you need to concentrate on. It's to ensure that you unlock tourism potential in the country. Because both then in terms of addressing issues of your job creation and equality, they have a huge potential because you employ a lot of people in this region. So we are saying, therefore, there is a need to engage the PICC. Then also there was an issue of youth employment incentives and placement. So these are two issues, but they are not mutually exclusive. That's why we were dealing with them as one here. So the President mentioned that at NetLeg, the social partners have already concluded the issue of youth employment incentives. So I think as a country we come a long way on this matter, whether it was youth employment incentives or youth wage subsidy. So there is a very fine line there. Now, it was clear in this honor that what has been agreed on is not youth wage subsidy, but is youth employment incentive. So what does this mean for tourism? Firstly, in terms of people, of learners that have graduated from tourism, you have about 11,000 just from MIT colleges alone, and the President did allude to that. They have not been paid. Now, if you look at that figure, it's quite a huge figure. And it tells us for tourism, there is nothing wrong there. Why? Because if you look at tourism is an industry where before learners could graduate, they will need this intensive training. So in that 11,000, there are people that have already graduated and there are people that have not graduated that are still awaiting placement for in-service training. So there is a role there for the portfolio committee to play. That's why, therefore, as the National Department of Tourism in this regard, one has to ascertain how these employment incentives will be accessible for tourism industry. Because we need a package, so I say, okay, these incentives sit elsewhere in another department, not in the tourism. But we then need to access those, a portion of that needs to be accessed for the tourism industry. And also, the private sector becomes critical here, because if you want to place these learners, either for jobs or for experiential learning, you need to have buy-in from the private sector. So there is also a role there to play in terms of ensuring that these learners are absorbed within the job market. So here we see the role of the Tourism Business Council of South Africa as critical in ensuring that the incentives, also placements, are achieved within the tourism industry. Now, another component in terms of this placement is the role of CAT SETA, which is a theater for tourism, because they are the ones that are responsible for specialized training in terms of the tourism. You have a problem there as well where some of the programs do not really serve the industry. So I think we need to work together with CAT SETA, TPCSA, and the department to ensure that there is what we have coined here, the Tourism Graduate Placement Program, but at an executive level, that can be refined. But for our people this year, we are proposing what we call the tourism graduate placement level. So that, for example, if they have an agreement with TBC, they should say maybe they have, let's say, 5,000 spaces throughout the country through the association to place this learner. So the universities and other higher education institutions will know where to refer these learners for placement, if they, other than these people going to universities, when they provide the theoretical aspect of education, then that's it. So we see the development of a tourism graduate placement program as a solution to that one. The issue of tourist arrivals, I think this is the only major thing that we see from the zone, as to say, in the first three quarters of last year, tourism performed at a very impressive rate, 10.7%. It was 10.5 in the second quarter. It grew to 10.7 in the third quarter. And if you look at Prophet Ada, at the global average, we outperformed the global average. And therefore, at the current, we need to ensure that this growth trajectory is maintained within the tourism industry. And that can be done through marketing strategies. Kuprov alluded to a number of markets that we have, that SAT has already segmented in terms of market segments, so core markets, your emerging markets, and so on. So we need to ensure that SAT in particular continues to market the country in those destinations to ensure that we sustain this growth. But also segmentation, particularly African markets. So that is, I think SAT has started to work on that, but it's something that the committee needs to emphasize with SAT to say, as much as we appreciate these international arrivals, because if you look at the numbers that are current in terms of saying for every 16 arrivals, you have one job and so on, that is taken at an international level. So the African market, because of the problem with numbers or tourism statistics in Africa, so it's taken out. But if you look at the arrivals, just raw figures, you can see that the numbers from Africa are increasing. So we can then increase that 60, because if you look at countries like Angola and how much they spend, for me, if we include those markets in the statistics, I think maybe the job creation there is 1 point something to 2 jobs. It's not just one job. It's just that our focus has been on international arrivals. But also there is an issue with statistics, because I think this is an issue at an academic level and also at an applied level when we work with these figures. Is the issue, I think, the community that is aware of that in South Africa, we use mainly two tourism figures. You'll have figures that are crunched by Statistics South Africa and figures that are crunched by South African Tourism. And these figures don't talk to each. So there is no confidence in our numbers. So it has been indicated at an executive level that there is a move to consolidate these two by 2014. So I think the role of the committee here is to ensure that there is a strong follow-up in terms of ensuring that there is standardization in methodology that is used to crunch these figures, because methodology is not the same. We'll find, for example, that when they use these indicators, they will say you exclude, for example, persons under the age of 18. But if you were to look at flights, if you book a flight, that person pays a full amount to go to the restaurant, they pay full amount and so on. In terms of our figure, therefore, we are missing something. So a strong follow-up by the committee will be needed in terms of that. There is a declaration of methodology that we use as a country to collect figures. That is at a national level. But that also mirrors the challenge at an international level, where you find that you have numbers that will be produced by the World Tourism Organization and other statistics that is produced by WTTC, World Tourism and Travel Council. And also methodology there is not the same. The World Tourism Organization will give you your annual figures, whereas WTTC will give you figures at 10-year intervals, and they'll use projection percentages and combining over 10 years. If you look at South Africa, for example, the growth that we have had since 2008 and immediately after 2010, and this, so the percentage is lower than where we are. So at an international level, our figures will be reported lower than where we are because of that compounding methodology they use when they come. So the issue with statistics is a challenge, but at a national level we can sort it. The international one is a bit of a challenge. Then there is what we picked up in SONA as issues related to tourism education. The president talked about declaring education as an essential service. That has implications in terms of the level at which the speech was pitched. Because if I have to say we all have to take education seriously, we are not taking away the right of educators to strike and so on and so on. But what does this mean for tourism? We have serious tourism education-related issues. You find that the tourism sector, your private sector, always complain about the quality of our graduates that we produce for the sector. There is a disjunction between tourism graduates and what the market wants. I think there is an agreement at an executive level that need has been realized to say we need to ensure that we address market issues. Also, you have issues of shortage of critical skills. Tourism is pitched at an academic level by many institutions, whereas tourism is mostly a practical. There is a difference between, yeah. So now you'll have at a university level, that is where you are training people for management, policy-related issues in tourism. But there must be a strong focus if you need, because that is a small, in terms of job assimilation, that is a very small sector of people that we need. But I'm not saying we don't need those expertise in the country, we don't need that. But that number, that 11,000, find that universities are producing a lot of people who have theoretical information, who cannot be absorbed. So I'm saying, therefore, there is a need for a dialogue between the Department of Education at a basic level to say, what are the fundamentals of tourism that we teach? And where are we channeling these people? Also at a higher learning that talks to your university of sociologists and your mainstream universities prof to say, really, what is it that we want to produce? So what caliber are we servicing the intellectual capacity, or are we servicing the job market? So for me, we need to improve seriously there. But this has implications for curriculum, which takes a life of its own. So it is not controlled by this portfolio committee. It sits with other portfolio committees, your basic education and higher education. But there needs to be that discussion to say our needs, because we'll keep on saying people are not employed. We have graduates that are not employed, whereas the issue there is not that employment opportunities are scarce, is that we have irrelevant skills to offer to the job market. So That's why I was saying there needs to be a dialogue between these three portfolio committees to see how we deal with issues of curriculum in the tourism industry. I was even looking at the slides. If Prof, I can make an example with your university because you are here. In terms of Prof is the head of the Department of Geography and Environmental Studies, but embedded in that is tourism. So the dialogue we are proposing is to say, let us look at tourism and put tourism in its rightful place, even at that level, because the academics will argue that tourism is not a discipline on its own. It has connotations of geography, we are talking migration of people and so on. So now, if you look at the development of tourism over the years, other scholars are saying tourism has come to a point where it is a fully fledged discipline. But this is an academic discussion that we need to sort out at a level of this three portfolio committees, so that you start even at that level to have a focus, because if you cluster tourism with geography, you'll often find that in those institutions, geography and environmental issues, they will take a center stage. Then, I'm not sure what is the case at UWC, but you'll find that most universities are structured like this. There are few universities with Department of Geography. Geography is still under the same department. Mainly, if you go for PhD, you will graduate as a tourism graduate, but under the particular faculty. So, therefore, the issues of tourism, even at that level, in terms of addressing these needs, for me, there is something missing there that we need to discuss with the Department of Higher Education to say, how do we put, because if we say tourism is one of the six economic pillars, but we do not address it from that level, if things will remain as they are. Then we also pick up issues of land reform. It was noted in the President's speech that the issue of lodgement of restitution claims might be reopened. I think we all know that the process was closed in 1998, but there are communities that were excluded. So everyone in the country, I think, knows that. But what does this mean for tourism? We are still, as a country, sitting with a challenge with those claims that were closed in 1998, whereby a lot of land that was returned to communities, some of this land had game farms, game lodges, some had cultural heritage establishments. There was no plan to then support those establishments. So over the years, those establishments have ceased operation because there was no plan. So now we are saying if the claims will be reopened, so then there is a space for this committee to start working on what will happen if, let's say, some of the land that is returned to communities has tourism establishment. So I'm saying to avoid what happened with the previous claim, we need to come up with what we appoint here, tourism support program, to say, because of agriculture, the will have some incentives and try to protect issues of food security so that those farms that are returned to communities do happen to continue working. But for tourism, there is no program that says how do we support these establishments. So I think, therefore, there must be discussion. When land is identified, this committee should know if that land has some tourism potential so that a scheme can be worked out either with redevelopment and land reform or from NDT side to say how do you come up with support programs to ensure that those facilities are not put out of business. Another issue that we picked up, Chair, was the issue of the image of South Africa as a destination. Here, the President was talking about the rape that is happening in the country and the violence with which these things happen, and the committee that was established that is trying to ensure that we try and eradicate this problem. But for tourism, what is happening to women and so on has a very serious negative impact and might destroy South Africa as a destination. These rapes, cruelty against women, they attract media attention internationally. So when people hear about these things, they then think about the destination. So we are saying, therefore, it is not our role as tourism as such to fight that, but we have capacity to send positive messages to the world. We have two entities here, South African Tourism, which is under the auspices of this committee, and also have Brand South Africa. These two entities for us must make sure that they respond to this. It might not necessarily be to repair, to raise in other violent crimes that are committed in the country, but to continue having constant messages on international media like your CNN, BBC and so on to ensure that what people see, because it will just be not a small thing because people die, but it's not everywhere that you go in South Africa. Because out there, people just visit South Africa. You can't come to South Africa, you'll be raped. And so also, we need to tell people that, no, it is still safe to come to South Africa as a tourist so that we maintain that growth of 10.7% we're talking about earlier. Sports tourism. Here the President was talking about the country having successfully concluded hosting AFCON, congratulating the country and Nigeria for winning and so on and so on. But that opportunity is there for tourism. Sports tourism is one of the very big niche markets in the world. In South Africa, if I were to use words of the white paper that Upro talked about, that has been a missed opportunity, because we organize sports and we do not synergize that with tourism. It happens perfectly with the hosting of World Cup, because somehow we were forced by FIFA to do it through match, but it doesn't happen organically. So I think as a country, we have to start to see how this portfolio committee works, in this case with portfolio committee on sports and recreation, to ensure that you build this sporting events in tourism, or build tourism into them, because hospitality and everything else is tourism. So the only sport aspect of this will mainly be in the field. But outside the field, where these people go pre and post those matches and so on, is in our domain. So I think, so this is, we are just referring to this because what was referred to in terms of tourism. But also, in terms of cultural tourism that folks are talking about earlier, we also need to work with others to say, how do we build art and culture? We already have the heritage and cultural tourism strategy at a national level by NDG. How do we implement that? It will need a lot of interaction between our committee and the Committee on Arts and Culture to ensure that these talks, sometimes they just happen because the tour operators see a need, for example, that you need to go visit Robben Island. It does not just happen spontaneously, but it is packaged as a cultural or heritage tourism for the country. So we just then summarized all this into the, something that we have already mentioned in the presentation, but it's just to take it point by point in terms of recommendation. So the first recommendation, Chairperson, is that the National Department of Tourism must revise 2020 targets in the NTSS to 2030 to align with the National Development Plan. So I'm not sure if you, the usage of the word must there is an appropriate one, instead of your powers of discussion with the executive. But instead, let us preach them at this level, because for us, it's something that must happen. But it needs to be discussed, because the strategy is not in your realm as a social committee, sits with the minister, but there needs to be discussion there. Another one is that the social committee needs to engage the PICC to discuss funding of catalytic tourism infrastructure projects. Here we know for sure that the National Department of Tourism has already engaged provinces on this matter. So there are projects that have been forwarded by provinces to NDT, but there was no mention in the thought about them. And if you get the secretariat of the PICC, is at an executive level. So if we say NDT must engage PICC, maybe there might be that issue. That's why I say maybe the portfolio committee, because the secretariat of the PICC is at an executive level. So maybe what we may do is to request information from the department to give us the list of these projects so that we can analyze and survey these projects and see which one may be in discussion with the department you may want to prioritize when you engage with PICC. Also, the issue of the youth employment incentives. So, also there, the referral committee, because at the moment it is a conceptualization level, but NDT moving forward, because this will become progress, will be running with this. But I think now, because this is a conceptual level, the portfolio community needs to find out for sure what is in this thing for tourism. The issue of also looking at the graduate placement program, the department together with private sector and KCI Tawasi, they must work on trying to find out how we can develop a graduate placement program. Also, I think SAT needs to identify marketing initiatives, but in so doing, ensure that we consider all market segments and we sustain your emerging markets while you still do some activations in your core market. In terms of curriculum, which might be a difficult one, but I think we may start discussions in terms of revising curriculum for tourism. Also, the tourism support program, in terms of the land that might be returned to Cayman as a result of land restitution, the international media campaign in terms of protecting the brand image, and lastly, it might be a controversial one, because you have the National Convention Bureau that has just been developed by SAT. It has a specific mandate, and that specific mandate is for business tourism. But we see that mandate as having potential to go to other things, like bidding for, we know the bidding is an issue for sports, but I think for Olympics, for example, we can play a very big role to ensure that we are involved through the Bureau to ensure that we bid for more other international sporting events to ensure that we promote tourism. We are saying this because at a provincial level, some provinces already have established their own provincial conventions. Some of these things may not be done at a national level, but may be done at a city level. But the mandate exists before your business tourism, but with engagement with NTT and NPP through SAT, maybe that mandate can be extended. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mrs. Kuzai. Honourable members, I'm not sure because the Secretary told me that the DT is ready, it might be called. Can we take 10-day break and come for questions and discussion on the matter? Thanks.
Okay. room for
Thank you for tea break, and now time for the members. Oh, there's so many members. I'm sure these are the level for the general. But Prof, and all the presenters, I think even the members, you know that we have been saying this for our terms of the tourism at our college. That's why we might look at that and how can we best, maybe as a committee also to engage all the departments.
I don't know about the timing in Parliament, because according to the two presentations, it shows that there's a need of sitting different departments and committees on this matter, so that we should get down, so that our work might be well. Can I then give Honorable Shai for questions, and the President will respond. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I wish to commend Professor Daniel Tiller for such an informative and very clear presentation. As well as Mr. Kuzwayo, I don't see him here. Is he coming back? I'm not sure. I don't think we should be despondent that the President didn't say many things about tourism. Because obviously his speech cannot be totally dedicated to tourism alone. I mean, there's a host of issues that he had to talk about. For me, I think there are a few concerns. One is obviously the one that we have this NTSS target, which project up to 2020, and then the challenge of creating a synergy and aligning that with the 2030 targets as envisaged by the National Development Plan. And the concern is, and nobody here from the department addresses the concern, there is someone. We don't just want to stretch a target, okay, we have to bring it to 2030. Play with a few figures here and there, boom, 2030. Because then we'd be fooling ourselves. I think crucial will be what tools are going to be using, scientific tools, to actually extend this target and this projection that we're going to be doing. What methodology are we going to employ? Because we don't want to just say, well, this was our target up to 2020, add a percentage here, minus something there, and boom, we've got a figure for 20. That's not what we want. So as a committee, we have to be very aware of that as to how we arrive at that attention. Boom. The other area that we as a committee will have to follow very, very clearly is the issue of enabling legislation to promote tourism. Let me give you an example. And as you rightly pointed out, President speaks about infrastructure development and rolling out of infrastructure projects. If I look at my own experience, Chair, in my own previous constituency, one experience, and one in my current constituency, and you already pointed out that whatever targets and policies we develop for tourism is not going to succeed until and unless the other related or relevant government departments do not come and play ball. For example, the Minister of Tourism cannot build a road. As I speak to you, and I put this question to the Minister of Transport, I'm giving you an example, because we're talking about infrastructure development, and we're talking about cultural and heritage tourism. Now, obviously, these heritage sites are in rural areas, some of them in deep rural areas. They need to be linked with main highways and systems, roads. Here you have a 15-kilometer stretch just before Nangoma, coming from Pongola that way, where there are some game reserves in the rural area, 15 kilometers of unharmed road, which is retarding the complete potential tourism potential of that area. So you spoke about rural poor. What about those people in those areas, rural areas now, who are sitting and they can't achieve what they want to achieve in terms of cultural heritage tourism because of this 15 kilometer? The tarred road goes up to the king's house and that's where it ends, because he's a king. But what about tourists coming from Mozambique? They're not coming by the R66 anymore. They're going straight on the highway. Okay? They are bypassing all these cultural heritage sites simply because of a 15-kilometer stretch. And I'm like fighting for that. So these are the challenges. We are talking about pro-poor tourism. We are talking about cultural heritage. We are talking about heritage. But a 15-kilometer stretch of road, who's responsible? I'm Minister of Tourism. People are arguing, but what about the local municipality? They don't have the bike to build that 15 kilometers. It costs a lot of money. So who's going to build that road? It's both national competency and it's also a provincial and a local competency. So these are the challenges there. And as I was just telling my friend from Mr. Kawaya, enabling legislation There are some environmental legislation which probably we need to actually, you know, revisit. Here's a project in Ugu district. We're talking about coastal. Somebody spoke about developing coastal resort. Well, here's the man who wants to resuscitate and rejuvenate a multi-million rand resort with a contracting facility with somebody else, Nesta. It was closed down, he bought it, goes to the municipality and says, listen, I bought this thing, I want to resuscitate it and build it and create jobs and get this thing going. So what do you need? He said, well, tell me what is the outstanding rates and taxes, whatever, on this building, on this project. It took them more than a year. They haven't given him the figure. Last week, I went, put pressure on municipal manager and mayor and everybody. Finally, I kind of got a figure out, half a million rand. Here's this man now going to go and pay half a million rand towards that local municipality, which they never had in their pocket before. Then he says, well, what else do I need to do? Well, he needs to go to the Department of Environmental Affairs and Agriculture in KZN and in Peter Madison. Say to them, listen, I bought this place, I'm going to start it, I'm going to fulfill my social responsibility, create jobs. We're talking about these 11,000 people, we're looking for placement. Here's an opportunity to create at least 80 jobs. If you look at that project. What's the problem? Now the Environmental Affairs and Agriculture Department said you have to pay a fine of 400,000 rand before you begin do anything, before you sign off. So half a million rand he is going to pay to municipality for it. And 400,000 rand must pay to this to the HOD of Agriculture Department before he can do anything. Here's a man investing his own money on a project somebody else messed up. And look at all the hurdles in his way. Starting from the local municipality, right up to the department. What is his sin? What is his crime? That he wants to invest in something somebody else messed up? So these are the challenges, colleagues, that we face. You know, and I'm actually pursuing it now, trying to resolve that one. I was discussing that with you. So, yeah, so Rukua, we talk about coastal resort, we talk about heritage. All of these things require, you know, a proper coordination and commitment from all the relevant departments and backed up by enabling legislation.
Honorable Manjore, let me welcome Honorable Lissau to today's meeting. Thank you very much.
Now, thank you very much, Chairperson. I also wish to thank the presenter for the information that they have sent me out this morning. Yes, I also tried to look at the State of the Nation address to identify areas that were linked to our work here in the committee. Yes, I think they have been identified. But I also identified the question of delivering infrastructure, because that has got a lot to do with how we provide it to manage it properly and improve it. Unfortunately, in South Africa, I don't know what happened in the first stage. Travel by railway just came. It seems as if it stopped. And there's very little of it going on today. I'm thinking of traveling not just within a city, but outside the city, connecting the various areas of our country. You know, travel by railway line, if, for instance, the trains are different and properly organized, you would find that tourists would use that kind of that method of transportation, because you are relaxed and you are able to view, you know, the country as you move along. But in our situation, because I think the railway system has become so deteriorated, we find that is hardly ever used by tourists. But we have been hammering on some of these points that have been raised here in the committee, but of course it's been a long change. Now, referring to one of the slides here, unfortunately there are not numbers, but this is the comparison on the number of jobs created per number of tourists arriving in the country. That's proportion 1:16. This is something that we have said about your apartheid for a very long time. Now, you are saying the government is underperforming as compared to other countries like Brazil, like Thailand, like Australia. It's true we have been listening to this figure ever since I joined this committee in 2009, but one wonders, how do you think we should improve this proportion? So as to compare with countries like those that you have mentioned here in Lady Arab too. Now the question of sharing the income, the tourism income, it is also mentioned somewhere here, Professor mentioned it, that there is need to share the tourism income and the bias towards the poor. I don't know how again we can get to this level, because when we were moving around in 2010, checking on airports and other infrastructure in readiness for the FIFA World Cup, some of the smaller cities, I don't know, for instance in Kimberley, some of the smaller cities complained very bitterly that actually in Zaranda you find that the tourists the areas like Gauteng, let me just say Gauteng, not Zulu, but Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, Middle Eastern, and the Western Cape, here in Cape Town. They seem to have the monopoly of the tourists that come into the country. And yet there is so much elsewhere in the country that could be of interest and value to the tourists. Therefore, they mentioned to us, hopefully, of course, we'll take this to the department, and we did. I remember we did in our debate. But we don't seem to move. The tourists, they move to open. From there, they fly to Durban. From there, they fly to Cape Town. We're talking about tourists in large numbers, international tourists in particular. We are also then saying we are underperforming. I don't know if you have any best example that you could take to the department, you know, to make them more aware of this. Now, the question of training, the curriculum, I'm happy, Chairperson, you are actually talking to SNN from the university. Because this is, again, another area where we think that South Africa really needs to improve in terms of training people to participate very effectively in the tourism industry. You know, when we were in Mexico last year, about this time, January, our tour guide was actually a university graduate. She had studied a subject like philosophy, like the history, and so on and so forth, and she was very good. But in Africa, you won't find that. We tend to think very low of tourism. We just take people of standard 8, you know, grade 8 and so on, and we expect them to guide our tourists and serve the beauty of our land to the tourists. And we don't know. I would like to hear from the lecturer from the University of Western Australia as to whether, so how you yourself see the question of the curriculum at university level really contributing towards the industry. Because in that way, we would be producing graduates that can help. I don't know, even at the level of the hospitality industry, it's hard to say whether we are moving forward or we are stationary, or we are moving backwards. When you get to some of these hotels today, you find that the people who are working there, like the waiters and so on, for example, they are non-South Africans. But good number of them are non-South Africans. But what is the proof now? What is that you need to do in order to ensure that, you know, it is the South Africans who actually receive people from other parts of the world into South Africa? Now, still talking about sharing, last week, or no, about 2 weeks ago, I was in a taxi taking me to the airport in Durban. And this young man, of course, we're talking about AFCON. I asked him about AFCON and so on, and their role. And he said to me, there is a great deal of unfairness sometimes from those people who manage, you know, the tourism industry. I wasn't able to say exactly where this is located. But he was saying to me, throughout the tournament, the taxes, as well in Africa, the taxes were not really, they were not involved. In other words, those who promote tourism did not involve them in taking a tourist up and down. He says transportation was deemed to bigger colonies, like other people, the cages and so on. So I'm saying it becomes very difficult for us as a community because we don't have control over what is happening in the tourism industry. But we have been talking here a lot about the social being biased towards those who are still trying to rise up in the industry. We've repeated this so many times, but it continues. So when I heard that story of that young man saying, we are here, in 2010 we were involved, we were given the opportunity to transport the tourists, but this time the African, travelers, tourists, have been given to companies that are already up there, you see. Now, another point that was in, the negative image of South Africa. Yes, we agree on this, it's true, but we need to, as we market our country, we must market it in such a way that we avoid negativity. But sometimes, how do you avoid negativity? So these things appear in the press, for example, newspapers, flash them. I don't know, but this is true. They do affect us, and I'm expecting them to affect us. The question of race and violence against women, we've heard about this too, and definitely not good for our country, so I don't know what it is that we need to do in order to make sure that we are not seen by other people in such a negative way. Well, it is true, of course, I'm happy after to learn that there is need for the alignment of the National Development Plan with the NTSS, the National Tourism Strategy. Definitely there will be. This is something quite interesting, I didn't think about it. But thank you very much for making us aware of that. Yeah, thank you for the time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mem Bam. Bam Gwanya.
Thank you, Jefferson. I also join in applauding the presenters. I admire them for the courage they seem to have when mine was totally at rock bottom, having to make a big meal, such a big meal, out of the president's address. When I continued to sink into my chair, listening to how little space was given to tourism, I was quite disappointed. But today, I'm sort of resuscitated a bit because there are people who are more alert than I am, who have made quite a huge presentation out of the two lines that I was listening to. Anyway, the president has no business coming to go down to the nitty-gritties as we have gone. He just needed to gloss over whatever he needed because there are so many departments besides tourism. So anyway, I do congratulate them for the courage. I am very happy about that. The second thing is that once you are the last in speaking, or you are almost at the bottom, you find that all the things you wanted to say have been meticulously presented. And to a certain extent that you find you are groping on straws, trying to sleep as well. A lot of things that impact on tourism have been addressed here, but I'm now sort of trying to scratch at the bottom of my questions and things here. First of all, Manjobe has addressed this problem about the railway lines, but I have found a lot of negativity in terms of, especially after the president has said something about the infrastructure and the network of railway lines and roads that have been started and those that are in the pipeline. There's a lot of negativity from the transport, especially from the taxi division, because they believe that by having the railway lines, you are taking their business. And you know how violent they can be when it comes to touching their business. But all the same, we applaud it because a lot of countries have managed to promote their economic development because of the ease of communication and transportation of goods. With us here, we sort of left the railway lines to rust and nothing has been happening. But now it's quite gratifying to find that there's a lot of rethink and there's a lot of activity that is planned around resuscitating the railway connections. So tourism, once we have got the railway lines in position, will improve quite a lot. I feel we are unfairly compared to the international world. I say in the sense that we have not made or built enough infrastructure to increase tourism like it is in other countries. We are still talking of bad roads going to the country where the heritage sites are. Nobody wants to go and get stuck in the rural areas when there is no good road going there. So other countries have invested quite a lot on their infrastructure, and so it is easy for them to promote their tourism. With us, we still need to do quite a lot towards promotion of tourism. When it comes to the curriculum, we have complained about this juxtapositioning of tourism, I don't know what I call them, lectures or tourism graduations that don't lead our children to anything because they just hang around on the streets without any employment because the curriculum does not talk to the industry, to the demands of the industry. We have talked about this, but I had the opportunity to look at the subject content I think about 2010. They have now changed. I've seen some certificates of 2011, 2012. They seem to have changed the subjects that are taught there. But still, they don't talk to the tourism industry. But I do commend Sokosan because they have got a program that they have developed whereby they are training people, especially these tourism graduates, to establish own businesses. So they take them in and sort of mentor them and skill them towards running their own businesses. That program is still very new, but I'm confident that it is going to create a lot of entrepreneurs. Again, we have got a problem. Tourism is not taken seriously in South Africa. It is just one of those, you know, to be laughed at programs or departments. But I must say, the standalone Department of Tourism has made a lot of strides towards creating a commendable department out of the tourism department. And I hope that in future it is going to be growing and growing to, you know, to strength, to higher strength or to better strength. The department has got a problem of synergizing with other departments who look down upon tourism. They will not pay heed. Like, for instance, there needs to be financial support towards tourism entrepreneurs. Other countries do this. But you find that even the very Department of Tourism itself clings to the purses like nobody's business, not wanting the money to be squandered or to be accused of wasting government money, instead of giving people the money that they apply for, but monitor, keep strict monitoring systems onto the or to the money that they have given out. Otherwise, the people out there don't have enough capital. They have ideas. They may be upset, but they need to have the finance to go with it. And the government has got the money. That in the past, the money was squandered, is a wake-up call enough for us to make sure that now we are on the alert. We know what to do. You cannot entrust people with millions of rand and not care what they do about it. You need to monitor whatever you've given out and make sure that people stick to their business plans and you make them stick to them with all the might that you can you can afford. The standardization, I do appreciate this because you find that it is sort of disheartening also to find that the same measurement is not the same. One measurement is not the same. You find that people are looking at different types of measurement. And you find that I'm glad that something is going to be done about that because it has been quite a misleading at times. The safety of tourists. It's bad. South Africa has been painted, especially lately. We have had too many incidences of violence. I think the psyche of the South African, especially, I'm not sorry to say, males have got a very, very low opinion of women. And as long as this is not corrected, that perception is not corrected, we are going to continue doing this. I think that the males feel threatened by women, and at the drop of a hat, they think that the only thing they can take their angers out on is women. The country has got to establish a very strict gun accessing regime. You know, the nation now is held on the hands of a dilemma. People want to protect themselves. They buy guns. They want guns. They apply for guns. But at the same time, there are those who access guns for other means, for committing all these heinous crimes. There is no reason why the government is not strengthening its reins on the issuing of guns because they seem to be now the flavor of the century of the decade. People no longer hit with knobkerries. They use guns, and during those days, people used to be hit with knobkerries. But really, this habit has got to stop, and the very high level of violent crime in South Africa. It's frightening, and every time you meet an overseas traveler, you find that the first thing they talk about, am I safe to be here? Or what will happen to my children? What will happen to my wife? And who will protect them? All these questions come up because of the image that we have protected of our country. And this thing seems to be it seems to be a daily occurrence. In fact, they read out the statistics of these homicides on the media, but I've just forgotten. I didn't think that was it. The NDP seems to be at center stage of our development. I had hoped that tourism was going to be attached to the announcement of the NDP. Anyway, I think by the walking in of the chairperson, I'm given a sign to stop talking. I've been on the microphone for too long. Thank you for coming, chairperson.
Thank you. But of course, this means sharing. You will respect me in terms of time because I give you a time to. And let me give you a time to respond. Thanks. Let's start with me. Oh, before, let me give a chance to.
Yeah, because you have noted me so, and I requested. Thank you, Chair, Honorable Chair, and my apology for coming late. I've got the chair. He understands my challenge, but I'm trying my level best to balance. Having said that, Chair, I'm just looking at the presentation, which is on what we're discussing now, that I tend to have a difficulty of comprehending our discussions and contribution to the paper and the two good learned friends has presented to us. But one, let me start by welcoming, as my colleague has said, in terms of the presentation that it listed, the upgrades that they still also critique what government present. Because my understanding is that the president was not talking on his behalf, was talking on our behalf, because all of us cannot be president. That's my understanding. But having said that, Chair, but I think it's fair for one to say, without being defensive, but just to be very clear, that in terms of infrastructure, this government, we have allocated some budget in terms of a huge infrastructure investment moving forward. Probably the only thing that we should say that will aid our sister department through our chair and then through the classes and all that, to say, how could we best speed up that process without undermining the supply chain processes and the quality of the work that should be done. The other one, I think the areas that they've raised in terms of the last page, where I'm sitting also, probably the quickness to applied mind, out of the areas that they've raised as recommendation, find its expression in our decision making. Some others are somewhere within the cracks, and others they need just to be combed up. And I'm saying those are the things, because in one meeting also where we raised the issue of there was a presentation last week, yeah, it was last week, the issues of the curriculum and the class. But also probably it was going to be a very good thing when we critique and react as frustrated honorable members. The department is here also to hear what we're saying, because we're not the implementers. We do the oversight after event, things have happened. And I'm saying probably when we also look at the strategy and review their strategy in terms of the performance, also we'll pick up these issues and say we want to see them finding expression in their business plan as the department itself. With noting that we are moving for elections, but moving forward, they need to pick up those issues and be very strong on those issues and see how do we lobby other departments, because we are more of a soft issue, because tourism is more driven by private sector. I raised that thing, the chairperson who's not chairing would remember that I said, how do we, without imposing ourselves as government, but how we dangle the carrot to the industry so that they assist us? Probably also the issue of curriculum. How do we ensure that the Department of Higher Education and FETs also play its role in terms of this? But other brains also, your professors and others also assist us so that the existing curriculum does also try and pick on what you were saying that it doesn't attend to.
Thank you very much. Let me first welcome that the being honor of the welcome and the shepherds of this committee. Welcome again in this meeting and give the professor to respond. Okay. What are you for?
Can I maybe add something to that? What has been said about curriculum and especially the issue of, you know, are we training people for specific jobs or are we training people just for scholarship? I think that, again, the FET colleges and at the University of Technology, they're pretty well established and they've got quite close links with industry and they do try to construct their curricula in line with what industry is looking for. I think there's a lot of work to be done as far as the mainstream university go for tourism curriculum, because tourism is only really being established now in South Africa as a university subject. There's a little bit of clashes between departments and faculties as to where it really fits in. You know, tourism has got, we've got it as geography, part of geography, but it's actually got a bit of economics, a bit of social sciences, a bit of pure science. So it's struggling to find its feet in the mainstream universities. At the same time, there's a bit of a clash with the objectives of the universities for producing, you know, scholars and masters and doctoral degrees, as opposed to giving people skills. And I think it's a debate that is constantly taking place. It's a debate where do you actually draw the line between giving people skills and training people to train people from the academic side. So I think there's a lot of work to be done at the level of traditional universities to develop tourism as an academic subject. Overseas universities, almost all universities have a department of tourism and recreation. There's only a couple in South Africa. There's one in KwaZulu-Natal, one at the University of Vela, where tourism is standing with only 2 feet. Otherwise, it's part of economics, a part of geography. So I think we need to work at giving tourism more independence, where it can actually exist as a subject on its own.
Thank you, Chair. I think one positive thing we can imagine from the meeting is really the feedback on our curriculum. We are finding this, you know, very useful because, you know, at university, there is that debate, that conversation. What kind of person are we trying to produce? Is it a person who is a scholar or who can now, you know, be very effective, you know, when it comes to market issues? So the feedback we are getting is really very useful for us. And as a department, we will be having, this is something we are going to do anyway, a curriculum review. So this is a very good opportunity, you know, for us to have this self-examination. Because it's important, we want to produce students who, when they've graduated, can be employed. We want people who are employable. So we thank you for that rebuke. We will try to see what we can do about it. There were a number of other persons going to, you know, Honourable Member of Parliament, your question to do with the statistics, the 16-1 for South Africa and in other countries where there are more jobs created. Sometimes what we do, you know, again in academia, this is what is happening in other places. Is there room, is it possible for us here to improve our competitiveness or to get the most out of tourism by doing something else? Unfortunately, I wish we had a solution for this. But you know, we don't have a solution. But I just want to refer to something I observed, which might help explain why in some countries, the moment you arrive, you land as a tourist, you find if you're not careful, the system is, you know, things are managed in such a way that, you know, there's so much going on, and if you're not careful, you end up wasting all your money. I visited Costa Rica some years ago, you know, in Air Panama and so on. So it was a conference. But they organized in such a way that they created a bit of time. I think there's an understanding that, you know, you go for a conference, if you create half a day, then, you know, you are already for it. And then we visited what they call the Trocadero National Park. But the way it's managed, I was just thinking, okay, firstly, you don't drive to that national park for environmental arguments. They said, we don't want to disturb the tranquility and so on. So what do? You drive about 20 kilometers before you get to the national park. You know, then you take a number of small boats and so on. I observed, no, there were a lot of people who were, you know, who are employed on the small boats, and by the time you get to the to get to the hotel, it sounds more like small chalets with a lot of helpers and so on. And it was during the season where they call it, you know, turtles were laying eggs. So they said at night, you know, there's going to be viewing of that, and there were a number of other, you know, guides, you know, for a few people who were showing us and so on. So I started thinking that they managed it in such a way that, you know, there are so many people who are involved, so many people who are obviously earning something. I'm not saying that's the only model, but perhaps our private sector and other stakeholders should think about, well, see how we can expand the opportunities the moment a tourist arrives, how they can be exposed to so many things. Then regarding infrastructure, I agree with you that we might talk about proper tourism, this heritage site and so on. But if there's no road, if you can't get there, it's a problem. Some people have been writing on, academics about this poor infrastructure. But then you find when it comes to decision making, a road is supposed to have to be of economic independence. If you want a small road, maybe which leads to a place where there is no mineral, there is no industry, there is nothing. In terms of priority, you're not likely maybe to have that road tied than the next road which goes or which links up economic areas. So it's a challenge which I agree with you really needs to be resolved, and it's difficult to deal with it. I think this is
Can I just add something about tourist guide training? You mentioned guides being very highly qualified. Egypt, for instance, every tourist guide has to do a 3-year course, and they've got a degree in Egyptology, which obviously South Africa doesn't happen. Anybody can really become a guide within a few weeks. But on the other hand, it's one of the areas that gives people an opportunity to break into the tourism industry. People who've got simple experience of their own environment, their own areas where they live. Yeah? And these are people who sometimes make the best guides. Not necessarily the education, but just the experience which they can impart onto the tourists. So I think on the one hand there's a case for you know, having better qualified guides, but on the other hand there's a case for really getting people bring their own experience to the industry.
Can you switch off your mic?
Maybe in response to the first question in terms of extension of our projection to 2030. It's a necessity that we do that, but we have to acknowledge the difficulty with which we can achieve some of these extrapolations. Because if you look at the NTS as it is even now, there are gaps in terms of some information because there was no benchmarking done even for 2015, when the department is busy trying to conduct benchmarking studies. So because of the nature of tourism, it has not been considered, as members have been saying. So there's rank that has started. So we won't be able to extrapolate all projections to 2030. Other by the nature of how you arrive at those statistics itself. So it will be, but there are that we can easily align. The second question was with regard to enabling legislation and how it is difficult sometimes to implement proper tourism and so on. Mainly, I would like to take that question together with the question that was raised with regard to sharing of income for poor tourism. Because the challenge that we have as a country, tourism is affected by a number of other legislation. We've been talking about tour guides, for example, the legislation that regulates that this is transport. But with poor tourism, the main stumbling block there are the EIA regulations. Maybe with the committee secretariat later, in the program of the committee, we may invite the Department of Environmental Affairs to come and appraise the committee in terms of the EI regulations that were promulgated in 2010. Because what another brochure was saying, I think that most of the members might encounter in your constituencies, because those EIA regulations have specifics in terms of tourism. You can't build a lodge that is so many rooms if it is so far away from protected area and so on. So in our saying, if you want to try and promote proper tourism, you'll want to establish this, for example, next to your game reserves and so on, where you have tourism feet. So you can't do that because of EIA regulations. So I think that is something that the committee needs to engage with. Now, not that you can change, I'm not sure if you, but I think you can lobby with your colleagues in other countries, but really, just to ask the plan for tourism, because there is so much that you can do because of the legislation that deals with the environment. So that also goes with your National Heritage Act that will regulate what you can do now inside your heritage park. In terms of your Drakensberg, your Smangaliso, your Kalahari, and so on. So the potential there, Professor, I think he visited this game in Costa Rica, but in South Africa, you cannot just go and develop anything there. So these are the latest, I think, the community needs to be approached so that you can start to see how then maybe you try and lobby for relaxation. So because we can have all this strategies in tourism, but we can't implement because on the ground, people can't move because of this legislation. With regard to infrastructure, that point was raised just to say, as much as we have this infrastructure project that the PICC is implementing, but there is little for tourism there. So we have to look at tourism-specific infrastructure that will unlock tourism projects, because infrastructure that we are doing now unlock other industries. Yes, the roads, to a certain extent, will address tourism issues, but you have tourism-specific infrastructure that you need to unlock tourism. Maybe what we can do there, also later in the program of the committee, is to request the department, because we know that some work that they have done, maybe to request the department to come and address the committee in terms of the PIDC projects that have been submitted to them by PRO, so that you can start to see the relationship between the committee and what is happening at the PICC. The issue of railway infrastructure, that was a challenge, because if you revitalize the railway industry in terms of passenger movement, not necessarily tourists, it becomes cheaper and so on and so on. It has connotations for your taxi industry, as has been said. But here we also look at rail tourism as a standalone from your passenger movement, because if you look at it as part of your passenger movement, then you lose it, because here you'll need specialized luxury trains that will be custom-made for tourists. It is happening here and in the country. Some of these trains have been running, they are no longer running and so on, because also there you have a challenge of the management of the railway line. It becomes very expensive. It is with Transnet, must have a lot of concessions with Transnet and municipalities. So most of these projects, they have died because of those concessions between municipalities and Transnet in terms of maintenance of, because though mainly where those trains have been operating, those have not been your major passenger routes. They have been operating just as tourism trains. So it becomes expensive to manage. Just to add on the issue of one 15 tourists create at least one job in South Africa, just to add in what Prof was saying. So it has to do mainly with how we've been conducting tourism in South Africa. What the department is trying to rectify now. Lastly, based on what Prof was saying, the issue of diversification of our products. Mainly, tourism in South Africa has been driven by accommodation sector and that alone. So it is only now that we are starting to diversify into activities, because what brings more money in the tourism sector are activities rather than accommodation. So even if you look at imaging enterprises in tourism, they will be going for your B&Bs or cultural lodges. You have few people that will go, for example, to things like bungee jumping and so on and so on. Whereas that is where you have niche markets, for example, your adventure tourism. It is happening here and there. That brings a lot of money, particularly in rural areas. But we are not in that space as that. Government, we can't, because that is a real private sector. They need to, but our strategies need to ensure that we facilitate investing more in activities rather than accommodation. The issue of curriculum and universities, I think. Yeah, we are referring mainly to the issue of skills to the industry, not that we don't need academics. If I can refer, Prof, there's one skill that we don't have in South Africa in terms of academia, is in the field of tourism economics. You will have all these other types of skills, your planning, your policy, tourism development. But when it comes to tourism, that is a big question, because tourism thrives on numbers. There are very few people in South Africa who can do tourism projections. Even the figure that if you look at, I'll just mention this company, because that is the one that is used mainly by government and private sector, Grandon Ching. That is the company. There are others like let me not mention the company names here. But I'm saying that one was involved more when the National Department was developing the National Tourism Strategy. So we have very few people in the country that can really crunch tourism figures. And that is in the realm of your tourism economy, which is mainly rooted in economic, but that economist understanding the field of tourism. So that is not a job at an entry level, is it? So I'm saying, therefore, we do need academia, but where most people can be absorbed is mostly on your soft skills level. Then the issue of image, difficult one, the image, but we hope SAT, because with marketing, you also have to understand the psychology of a tourist when we're going to do marketing. So campaigns, the counteracting are campaigns that they need to come up with in order to protect the image. You can't control what goes into the media, but they need to come up with counteracting statements to project the country. I was watching CNN to say, for example, if you look from the period of onion poison to the pistorius. So CNN every day, they have these negative reports about, in almost 2 weeks now, every day. Then you sit there, if you are passionate about tourism, and you say, hey, this thing is destroying us. But they have no control. So I'm saying, therefore, SAT and Brand South Africa have a role to play there in terms of trying and enriching our image. It has been dented, but we hope the tourism, they understand those that have been here and the tour operators that operate abroad, they understand. So they keep on bringing people here. But mainly it is the emerging market, and we're talking about very sensitive markets, particularly in the East. People really, when you talk crime, they will not go to those areas. The the Tohosan program that Woman Bampa are talking about, I remember that we've been on TV, the snippets of it is called the Book a Guest House program. It's a very good program, and we're thinking that maybe later we will also invite them, because it's a very good model of transformation in terms of implementing the VES forecast. There are some intangibles there, other than others that will, you know, get accredited, but you don't see results. With this Book a Guest House program, you have tangibles, and maybe I know that they're working with the department to a certain extent, but maybe we can just invite them to come and share with you how they do this, so that you can be able to conduct oversight even with other bigger companies. Others, I think, we comment. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. I wanted to give the chairperson of the committee chance, but Mr. Shai, after you, the chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. I think in conclusion, I think we missed out one thing in all of this discussion. We spoke about ProPoor, and I said how infrastructure was regarding that aspect. Transformation in this sector is a very critical issue. You can't talk about ProPoor tourism if we don't talk about transformation. And giving people access to funding in order to become a role player in the industry. So I think these are two areas, critical areas that we need to actually look at, transformation in the sector.
Thank you, Mr. Sir. Thank you very much. Chairperson, your input.
Okay, no. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, the first issue, I'm not clear if whether the university made a submission on this bill that we are having, because the deadline was the 15th, but I think for our good university, there is a submission even later than that, perhaps we can have time to consider that one. Have you seen the bill? I don't know. If the, So that is one of the problems. There is a bill, and then submissions were supposed to be up to the 15th. But for purposes of the creation, I think you can talk with the secretary to give you a copy of the bill, because we want to have a new platform for tourism towards the future. The second thing is the issue of the summit, tourism summit. We are planning to have a tourism summit later during the year. And roughly it would be towards 2030, the NDP contribution of tourism and so forth. So, but we are not as yet specific about the topic. But what we want to see is that as the NDP says, we've got to be inclusive as we go forward. And we've got to work together. The question of equity as we grow our economy, we've got to have an equitable growth, as you was the honorable member Shah was saying for poor. If you empower the poor, then you start reducing the gap between the rich and the poor. If you increase jobs, then that's when you reduce the gap between the rich and the poor. And then there are areas where we think academia can contribute a lot. Like areas like innovation in tourism, giving the information, best practices at other destinations, the global practices in EIA as far as tourism is concerned, the issue of heritage tourism, experiences, routes, what constitutes viable routes according to the site, information and knowledge, exploiting the presidential infrastructure program. There is a road building program and the rail road building program, which is on the way. What potential is that? What impact is that likely to have? Are we having potential destinations that we may not be aware of? When I went to the heritage agency here up the street. They told me that there was a town as big as Cape Town underground in Northwest. There were farms above it. It is an ancient town. It is not known. It has not been published. These are potential districts. The potential archaeological structures of interest. And the issue of competition, how we are compete in tourism. Because the thing is that we cannot as a nation just move on. Perhaps it could be master's programs, it could be doctorate programs, or it could be programs mutually agreed between the Department of Agriculture, of Tourism, and the university. Because I think what is encouraged by the NDP is this thing that we should not work on our own. In Mexico, the Department of Tourism is working with secret universities as its research and information capacity. So those possibilities should be explored, and I think as South Africans, given that we now have agreed on the definition, I think there are some things that we can do together moving forward. But universities really still depend on that. On the question of skills, something different. Where you produce skills like diplomas and certificates, yeah, we expect skilled people that can get into the job as well. But at a higher level, people need to have information so as to be in a position to lead properly. Because if you don't have information, you cannot lead. You cannot lead well. Well, you can lead, but you cannot do it well. So it's all those things we have to emphasize. This partnership. Don't doubt to talk to us whenever you wish to. On whatever matter. We are not this parliament that is that aloof and not receptive. We want to grow, we want to know, we want to do our oversight. But as public representatives, we are also leaders. We are expected to lead. So we can't lead without information. We can't do oversight without knowledge of best practices, without knowledge of innovations elsewhere, without knowledge of how they came around this EIA problem, which is really, really pervasive in South Africa. I'm not saying, let me not call it a problem, it is a challenge, because there is the other side. Let me be correct. Maybe if you are looking from the side of an entrepreneur, you may be wearing some glasses, and then the guy who is promoting sustainable development is wearing other glasses. So ours is not to take sides, but at the same time is to make sure that there is governance in a balanced way. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, from my side. I think the meeting is now adjourned, and let me thank everybody who participated in this meeting. And I adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
Okay.